What's up, everybody? Random show back like we never left. We've had some big life changes. We've both moved into different parts of the world. We are neither of us both in Japan anymore. We got some updates. But first and foremost, I am Lex Caliber. And as always, here with my main man, DJ L Spade, Marcus J. Johnson. G. Johnson. J. Johnson.
Japan. Welcome back, man. My homie, we bet like we never left. Like, seriously, people been asking, hey, man, y'all gonna do another random show? I'm like, yo, it's gonna evolve, man. Just, you know, for those of y'all who are close to me, you know that I lost my father last year. So I'm still in America taking care of family issues. I have a younger brother that I didn't want to just leave hanging. So I'm trying to just impart some of my knowledge now that I'm old enough to give some knowledge to him. But while I'm here, I'm also still doing Hollywood movies and music and branch it out and trying to explore some things. And my homie over here is in Australia now, branching out, doing miraculous things, and probably gonna be the next hottest thing down there since Crocodile Dundee.
Woo! Yeah, man, we're trying to get things up and running here. I've been in Australia for about a month, living in Sydney, which is super dope. I was interested in it since I was a kid, you know, watching Discovery Channel.
Been to the Opera House yet?
I've been across the bay from the Opera House. I went to, there's this park across the bay, and I went to see an opera in that park. It was an outdoor opera with the backdrop of the Opera House, but I have not actually been to the Opera House yet, but I will find my way there.
Man, shout out to
Rest
opera.
Assured. Yeah. Hey, man, bro, that's the ultimate singing from the diaphragm. God damn.
Bro, you gotta really want it.
Yeah, man, you gotta dig deep for that.
This is why we play the game.
And yeah, man, you know, we both, you know, you do the music and a lot of other facets as well. But one thing we do have in common is the acting hustle. And, you know, you doing your thing over there, and I'm trying to get my thing popping off over here. And, you know, for both of us, we are now in much larger markets than when we were hustling in Japan.
True. True.
So I think, like, the sky's the limit for both of us in terms of where we can ascend to. Because in Japan, there's a definite low ceiling for foreign actors. But, like, now that we're both in English-speaking countries, bro, like, I'm excited for the future for both of us.
You know what? No regrets, man. I love my time in Japan. I love the acting. I love all my friends and connections I made there. But do you think that kind of pigeonholed us a lot and maybe we stayed there too long?
Like you, I don't have any regrets. I was in Japan for 12 years. You were about the same, right?
Same thing. We came at the same time, bro.
Yeah. So don't regret it at all, because the thing is, we both got a lot of experience. We built up solid resumes, and our time on set, I think, is very respectable, like the amount of time that we spent. And so I think it equipped us very well for the next step in our entertainment careers. And as far as too long, for me personally, I felt like I got out at the right time for me, because as soon as I felt like, all right, yeah, I need to move on. I've grown as much as I can here. I got to take the next steps to keep growing and getting to where I want to get to. As soon as I felt that, I started taking steps to transition out of Japan. So for me, I feel like I got out at the time that was right for me. Now, granted, you know, the COVID years kind of threw a wrench into everything in terms of, like, the career, because there was a long time there where, like, the entertainment industry was, like, real slow motion. Like, nobody was getting jobs and productions weren't producing anything. And so there was that time, which weren't able to really further the career during that time, except, you know, you and I were doing the random show, and we were still creating content, but in terms of, like, getting those connections in the entertainment industry and you know, pursuing those larger jobs, like, there were no larger jobs to pursue. So I feel like those years are kind of I mean, as they say in Japan, shogunai, like there's nothing you can do about it. But in terms of like staying too long, I feel like I stayed just long enough personally. What about you?
I feel like I stayed 3 years too long, and that's primarily because of COVID. If you remember, I got a big Hollywood role in Japan in 2017.
She's just a
She's just a
shadow.
shadow with the homie Adam Sherman. Love you, brother, man. But
Hey, yeah, shouts out to him. Shouts out to him, man. I never met him 'cause you got the job and I didn't. But like shouts out to him for all that he's done for you. Like I feel like a kinship with him because he's done so much good for you and I appreciate that a lot, man.
Adam is the type of guy, like, he's my brand of weird. Well, yeah, shout out to the homie Adam for that. But I will say I stayed 3 years too long because when I got that role in 2017, it was already understood that that was coming out in 2019. So when I came back in 2019 for the premiere, I was like working connections. And the goal was to go back to America in 2020. That was the goal. I was lined
Yo,
up.
sorry to interrupt, but you remember you and I were talking about spending a summer in LA,
Yes,
like
that was
sharing an
it. Yes.
Airbnb and trying to hustle and make
Hustle. That
connections. Yeah.
because what I did was, you beat me too. I went to you. I was like, hey, bro, let's go ahead and make a run in Hollywood. Because I got a little buzz from this movie and I got homies down there. Like, the homie Adam was like, yo, bro, you come down here, man, just holler at me. I got you. David was the same way. Like, look, man, you come down here, holler. Like, man, are you serious? Because, I'm going to come. It's like, nah, man, come on. I got you. And I was also hollering at my homie Adam Falk. He's like, man, come down there. I got you. Who, man, really took care of me when I went down there the last time. The homie Jordan had talked to him, like, man, I might need to bum on your couch for a few weeks. He's like, man, I got you. And then I was talking to you, and I was like, man, let's get this Airbnb, let's get it popping. And like, I was getting auditions, and then everything shut down. And that was like the death of my burn. Like, everybody got a COVID horror story, but that's my horror story. Like, I was ready to make a push. Like, yeah, this is the time I'm gonna do it. Like, yeah, I got this little burn, I got this bug, my IMBD popping. You know what I'm saying? And man, COVID happened, everything shut down. And then when everything opened up, it's like, who are you again?
Dang.
So I feel like 3 years too late for me. It's not my fault. No regrets. Man, it's a pandemic. Everybody got a horror story. Like, some people didn't make it out on the other end. So I'm not mad at it. But that was a weird time if you was in entertainment and you didn't have nothing else. Like, thank God I had the random show with you. To stay on my game presenting, I had the podcast, I was doing music. Like, that was the time that music income came in handy, because albeit it wasn't a lot, but to have $300, $400 a month coming in from revenue, that helped. Because, man,
Oh
it was hard for a second.
yeah. When times is hard, man, that extra few hundred, man, that's big. That's major.
Bruh, you was there. Like, nothing was happening. There was literally
No.
nothing. They was doing reruns, and they really got us, because a lot of times they'll play your stuff, they didn't pay you no residuals.
Nah, man. You know, bro, I had a meeting with a talent manager yesterday, actually. And, you know, because right now I'm in the process of sending out emails to agencies and trying to get meetings and find out which representation is going to be a good match for me and good match for them, right? So I had a meeting yesterday and I was talking with this dude, real nice guy too, and he had an idea of what it was like in the Japanese entertainment industry, that it was kind of like the Wild West, so to speak.
It
But
is,
when I
yeah.
told him just how Wild West it was, like he was shocked at the lack of regulation, the lack of rules, the lack of just common sense. How do you run an industry and how do you treat the people and everything? Like he was flabbergasted.
That's by design, though. So the thing is, right, and they keep us segregated. They keep the Japanese artists away from the foreign artists. So the foreign artists don't know how much they're being exploited. Like, the system is really made to screw the foreign artists. Like, my Japanese counterparts, they were getting roles, they had representation, they was getting residuals, they was getting higher pay. And then they'll get you and be like, yo, man, I'm gonna give you $200. Or did I get residuals? Nah, you just get $200. Well, how much is the job? Don't worry about that. Do you want $200 or not? I mean, yeah, but you're taking over 50% of my money. Can I get more? It all depends on how famous you are. Like, you had to really put your foot down even to get a decent wage. So then it becomes a number game. You got to hustle, 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 hustle. For me personally, like most people, you have a base job, like a part-time job, base job, either teaching or you're doing something on the side, keep that base income so you can be a little bit more selective of those. Post-COVID, bruh, folks was just taking what they could get.
Yeah, man. And speaking of COVID, man, one thing I want to say, shouts out to the Japanese government, because they were throwing that COVID money out there for people. And, you know, as a freelance worker, I qualified for quite a substantial payout of free money from the Japanese government. So, you know, they do have my thanks for that.
I did not, man.
You didn't get that money? You didn't get that COVID money?
I did not get that COVID money, man. I got like half of the COVID money and then I had to thug it out, bro. Like, seriously, shit. Like, them albums were Elspedia 2 saved me, bro. Y'all don't know, dog. Elspedia 2.
Yeah, you was hungry rapping.
Bruh, it was wild, man. It was definitely the Wild Wild West in Japan. It's still like no regrets, but I did see the writing on the wall when I did that that Hollywood movie with Adam Sherman. And when I got back to America, I really, really, really realized how bad we had it over there. We was getting exploited, bro.
Yeah, 100% agree. I think the experience is good, but it's also good to be out and into a place with that treats you more like a human and like an appreciated commodity.
Man, big facts. Speaking of different places, man. So how's the place, dog? You using sunscreen? Because you're in the beach. You're by the beach.
Every day, bro. I'll tell you, if I'm going to be outside for 5 minutes, I put on sunscreen, bro. The UV here, I shit you not. It's no joke, man. Like, there's the UV index, right? Which is from 0 to 11. And in the summer, like, it'll be between 9 and 11 here on a sunny day. Like, extreme. And the World Health Organization says, if the UV index is above 3, protective clothing and sunscreen is recommended. So I'm walking around, we got UV index 9, 10, 11. Like, I'm not playing around, bro. Like, they say black don't crack, but black does not prevent you from UV damage.
Hey, man,
you
know I don't know who started that rumor, dude, but that's something that folks look at me all the time when I'm at the beach and I got that SPF 50. Like, look, man, sunscreen started at 50 for me, buddy. Which I'm talking about. And people are like, wait, you're black, dude. What are you putting sunscreen? Like, bruh, we burn too, guys. Like, I don't know who started that rumor, but I'll burn and peel and everything. So shout out to you for dispelling it.
Yeah, bro, like I'm not playing around because I'm not trying to be here after my first year and then I look like I aged 5 years in 1 year. Like I'm not trying to have that. So I'm
even worse. Like, where these lumps come from?
Exactly, bro. I'm not trying to see no new moles. I'm not trying to get any of that. No freckles. I'm doing everything I can. Like, I still wear the tank tops and stuff, but every 2 hours, man, reapply. And if you enter the water, reapply after 40. I'm following these guidelines. I'm not. They ain't gonna catch me out here, bro.
But it matters, though. It legit, especially if you're trading your body. If you are trading on your body, you got to take care of your money maker. Folks always used to laugh at us. Like, oh, you can't eat nothing. You always on the diet. I'm like, yeah, because I'm trading on my body.
You moisturize your face?
Yes. Yeah. Like, why would I not? Like, why don't you?
You know? Exactly. Why don't you?
Like, you trying to shame me for going to the gym 4 days a week? I just don't get why.
let shit pop off and let's see who's more physically fit to get out of that shit.
Well, that's the thing, though. At a baser level, I feel like you always got to be ready in your age. Now, truth be told, 40-year-old Marcus L. Spade Johnson ain't the 20-year-old rambunctious. I'm going to fight anybody. If you 6'4", bring it. I'm not there anymore. However, man, like, I ain't going to let you, like, fuck me out. Like, I still got these hands if needs be, you know? Yeah. It becomes a different game as you get older, but you still need to stay fit and able to inflict violence, in my opinion. Because, like, as toxic as a trait may be, bro, you got to be willing to throw hands and get violence. And the threat of violence have to be there to keep people in line, which I think is part of the problem. Now, man, this generation ain't been punched in the face enough times. Like, they hide behind these damn keyboards and these misogynistic views and stupid, I don't know. I use this as a counterpoint. You remember them Fresh and Fit guys who did that podcast? It was super misogynistic and shit.
Fresh and Fit? Nah, that never hit my radar.
Thank God, right? So they're just a bunch of goofies, bro. They were doing that misogynistic podcast shit like a lot of dudes were doing. The antithesis of Pippin versus Simpin. Like, just doing I'm sorry, sidebar. A lot of folks were telling me, man, I love Pippin versus Simpin because you guys are speaking that truth. And then a lot of women told me they liked it too because we weren't misogynistic with it. Like, we were saying our opinions, but we were out here dogging women. So they really loved that. But the Fresh and Fit guys were out here dogging women. But now they got demonetized off YouTube and now they over here crying and shit on video. But they were all super tough guys at first. I find it weird. That's what I'm saying, dog. Like, these guys, they claim like they super masculine and shit like that. But then when the pressure comes, they fold up.
Bruh, hey, they got exposed.
I feel like it's going to be the theme of this year.
Exposed.
Like, bro, Diddy,
woo,
Nickelodeon, Kanye's convenient crazy, Elon Musk. Yeah,
him and his Trump. I don't understand Kanye's relationship with his new lady. Like, they be doing some weird shit, bro. That's all I'm going to say. I love his music. Musically, I love Kanye, but in terms of, like, his girl can't go out unless she's wearing lingerie kind of stuff. I'm like, that's just kind of weird, bro.
Bro, that's just toxic shit, bro. For me personally, it's toxic, and I don't know why we condone this. I really don't.
Ain't nobody can do nothing about it. He ain't breaking no laws, so it's not like, whether it's condoned or not, like, he gonna do what he wanna do legally.
Well, that's, okay. When I say condone, I mean that we enable this behavior. So it goes back to attention. It's like attention is number one currency now. So you will do dumbass shit just to get the attention, to market off the attention. And then when you get the attention, and which is working because we're talking about it right now. But when you get the attention, then you just market and sell that. That's what I don't like. It's this whole, let's just do shit outside the norm and pretend like it's innovative when, nah, you just trying to get attention, bro.
Yeah. I don't disagree with that. And speaking of, like, people getting exposed, this Mike Tyson versus Logan Paul or Jake Paul, which one is it?
Jake Paul. And I think it's Jake Paul, but whatever it is, it's the most despicable shit ever, bro.
Look, that's going to be telling in terms of exposure, because if there's some kind of agreement, like when Mike fought Roy Jones Jr., that, like, they're not going to headhunt each other, which I understand in that context, sure, but the fight loses a certain authenticity when things like that happen. And if there is some kind of setup where Mike is going to be handicapped, or they come out in headgear, or they agree behind the scenes that Mike's not going to go out there and try to kill the Paul brother, that's going to be, like, I would be disappointed extremely if there was some kind of situation like that, like if it wasn't just a fight. Because this is a young kid versus an old Mike Tyson. And there's a certain expectation of authenticity coming into the fight that, like, it's going to either expose some phony shit if there's some funny shit going on, or it's going to be real and legit. And I just hope it's real and legit, because I don't want to go through the emotional disappointment of seeing Mike Tyson in some phony shit.
Hey, man, this is all bad. Mike Tyson is 57 years old. This is a damn near 60-year-old man fighting a guy who's arguably in his prime, which, look, he's not a great boxer. He's not. But he is trained enough to get these regular dudes the hands. Like, look, guys, I'm telling you, like, he's not a professional boxer. I'm saying that as somebody who's fought, so with a level of experience. Like, he's not pro level, but he'll beat up your regular degular ass dudes. Like, so don't run up on him.
No doubt.
He got them hands for y'all. But you're looking at an elderly man. I don't know if Mike needs the money or he just the thrill of the fight, but to even sanction this is fucking ridiculous. Like, if Mike Tyson lose, then what? I got to see my childhood hero. As problematic as he is, I got to see him laid out like Willie Mays out there. You know, it's not good, bro. If he does knock out Jake Paul, then what? Then what goes next? I guess it's a good payday for Mike, but to even call out a damn near 60-year-old man, it's pathetic, bro. Once again, it's just the damn attention economy. And we going to watch. I ain't going to watch, but we are going to watch it.
I put it like this, though, because I think Mike is not a regular dude. Like, he's an anomaly. Like, you see him train. Like, he's still got that speed and power. Like, I feel like it would be impressive if he went out there and fought 100%. I don't feel like it would be like when Vitor Belfort fought Evander Holyfield, which was just Vitor just mauled old man Holyfield, which was sad to see. I didn't like that. But Mike is different, bro. And I feel like that's why it's such a big selling point, because he's not just some old man. Like, he still has hands and he's still an elite level. Like, he can't go out there and win a heavyweight championship. But in terms of how one ages, like, he's aged as good as anybody could hope to age. And
that's good, man. But just know, we're talking about combat, battle. Father Time is undefeated. The reason why I stopped competing at around 36 was because I saw my reflexes go down. I saw that happen. I wasn't as quick as I could. Like, can I still kick now? Yes, I still train. I still can kickbox. But I'm not there. This man could die in the ring. And I think we don't take that into consideration. Anytime you go in the ring, bro, you're one step from dying. This man get caught the right way. I have no doubt in my mind that Mike can give you a good performance for 3 rounds. Maybe, I'm talking about high point 5, maybe 5 2-minute rounds. But you're talking about 13 rounds at 60 years old, getting pummeled, just taking licks. That's unheard of, man. Think about your granddaddy going out there fighting. Your granddaddy can be in good shape, but this man is granddaddy level. This ain't good, bro. It ain't good to see a elderly man go out there and risk brain damage. And this goes to our hypocrisy, right? So we'll go to a boxing match and watch these folks get brain damage, CTE, trauma, blunt force trauma, get knocked out, laugh, and point. But then if it happened on the football field, DeMar Hamlin lays down after a hit, we like, oh my God, prayer circle, knee down. Oh, is he going to get up? Oh, like, bro, it ain't good, Alex. I'm looking at this shit just from a fighter standpoint and just a human standpoint. This is real deal gladiator circus type shit. This is like distraction type shit. This is like, man, we need to be focused on something else than this. And there's only so much I can say. Because Mike is a grown-ass man. He can make the decision he wants. And the Pauls are businessmen, and they're trying to make this money. But I think it says a lot about society that we actually finna watch this old-ass man get in the ring. Old-ass man that can kick my ass now. Let me say that. I ain't fucking with Mike. But we finna watch this old-ass man potentially kill himself for our amusement, man. I just got a problem with it.
Yeah, I just feel differently about it, because it's like he is an old man getting in the ring and there is a certain amount of danger that comes with that. But also on the other side of that, the mentality that somebody has to have to dominate on the level that Mike had, right? He's not a normal dude. Like he spent many years not training because he was afraid of who he becomes when he's training.
He's still human.
He's still human, right? But like, I feel like he has earned being held to a different standard. I feel like it's probably not a money grab for Mike. I feel like he doesn't need money like that. But I mean, who doesn't want a good payday anyways? But I feel like in terms of his gladiator spirit, you know, I feel like this is something worthy of being watched. And if Mike shows that he doesn't have it anymore, then, you know, don't need to see any more exhibition fights with him. But if he does have it, like, I feel like it should be respected. Like, if he goes out there and performs well, I think it's something worthy of respect. I don't think being old means you just have to be safe and bubble wrapped. You know, I mean, if you feel like you got it, and if you actually do got it, I feel like that's something worthy of applause.
That's a good point. I do get your angle, and I respect that you're right. So we should not pigeonhole him. Mike's a grown-ass man. He can make the decision. If he feels like he can do that, cool. I just think it says more about us that we're going to go out and see it. Like, if we had legit granddaddy fights, everybody would be like, what the fuck? Now, you're right. Mike Tyson is not average. The man is still a monster. Arguably, if not the greatest, one of the greatest heavyweights ever.
One of the greatest, like, for sure.
Like, one of them. Top three. I don't know who you're going to put above them, but like, top three greatest heavyweights ever. Maybe even top 10 greatest boxers ever. So yeah, he should be allowed that privilege. And if you want to watch it, cool. I'm not saying it, but shame on you for watching it. But yeah, it just doesn't sit right to me, dude.
I mean, we'll find out when the tape is revealed. You know, we'll find out what it is, you know.
When is the fight?
Oof. Is it this month? No, wait. No, I might be thinking of Tyson Fury versus Usyk. Because I know Fury and Usyk got pushed back because Tyson Fury had an injury during training. But it's going to be gone. All right, here we go. So Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul, you were right. Jake Paul is going to be July 20th.
Dude got a birthday before then. He's going to be 58 years old, huh? I mean, all right.
Hey. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we'll see, man. You know, you might be right. And we might go out there, see old man Mike, and just be sad and disappointed. Or, man, you know, it might go the other way. You know, we'll find out.
Like, look, man, boxing is always racial anyway. So you always go, look, man, if the black man get knocked out by the white man, bro, like, my whole childhood is gone. Like, seriously, like, bro, this is the death of my childhood. This is like seeing Optimus Prime get killed again. Like, yo, dog, like, my childhood gonna die. It's like finding out Goku died from the flu. It's like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah.
I ain't got nothing to believe. Yeah. Like, let me have something. I think something should be leveled up. Personally, I feel like, you know, you did it, but I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I hear you, bro. It could break a lot of hearts. That potential is definitely there.
If you win, though, I ain't gonna lie. I'm gonna be like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you see the way he's training. Like, you're like, look, man, he's still dangerous. His training, like you and I at not half his age, but substantially younger than him, we can't move like he can still move.
That's true. That's true, man. Dude got over a decade on me, and maybe damn near two on you.
Yeah, and if we can't do what he do, you know, we
who's
could
say,
who's to say? Because maybe if Jake Paul can't do what he do, then maybe Mike Tyson's going to do what he do all over Jake Paul. I mean, the potential is there. So I think
I hope you're right, buddy. I hope you're right.
I'm gonna be heartbroken. I'm gonna be heartbroken if I go out there and it's just old man Mike getting pushed around. Like, that's gonna break my heart too. So I don't want to see that.
I didn't know what happened. He just hit me with the jab. Look, man, the jab is underrated too, by the way, guys.
Like Larry Holmes has one of maybe, if not the best heavyweight jab. Either him or Ali, one of the two. But like, if your jab is a weapon and not just like a defensive tool or whatever, like, you're going to create a lot of problems for people.
Yeah, I'm telling you, that straight jab, bro. That jab leading into the cross. And I've been on the end of them just guys. Let me tell you. It ain't just a jab.
Yeah, right. But when you see somebody get knocked down or knocked out with a jab, that's when you know, like, there's a real one over there. Because Larry Holmes, man, that jab is like a piston. Just, whoop.
Stop saying that. Why y'all keep saying that? Y'all be like, well, the jab can't knock you. Shit. That shit hurt, bro. Like, with a straight jab, though. Like, yo, like. Yes, a jab can knock you out, bro. I've been knocked out by a jab. Like, yo, that jab catch you right in that butt. Blah. Bro.
Yeah.
The legs get a little weak. You start doing the janky leg. Oh, yeah. Yeah, dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what you think about that Beyonce album? Or have you even heard it?
The country album?
Yeah.
Not yet, man. I've been hearing rumblings about it. And I've been curious, actually. It's on my list of things to get to, because to be honest, man, until last year, I was sleeping on Beyonce hard, because it's like you grow up with Destiny's Child, and then, you know, she's been solo and crushing it for so long that she was just like always there. She's just omnipresent. Right. So I never actually listened to a full album because there's just so many singles and it's not really in the vein of music I usually listen to. But a couple months ago, I decided like she's prolific and I need to properly understand why she's so dope. So I went and I listened to the Renaissance album. And again, some of the content is outside of like it's not for me, you know what I mean, but there's a lot of good music on it, man. It's like it's original. She's got original approaches even now, and she's been in the game for so many years, man, decades. And so got a new respect for her, and like I need to check out the country album to see how she's trying to expand her catalog and expand.
All right, man, I kind of got to disagree with you on this. I don't consider Beyonce a great singer. I don't. And before y'all shoot at me, let me explain. There are singers, like people I want to hear sing, and then there are entertainers. Michael Jackson was an entertainer, and that's Beyonce to me. Beyonce going to give you a hell of a show. Like although I think Adele is a better singer, if you ask me what show I want to see, Beyonce or Adele, I'm going to pick Beyonce all goddamn day, because she's going to be in them 9-inch heels dancing. She might even do a backflip on your ass. Ain't no telling Beyonce, right? But when it comes to like straight up vocals, to me, there's way better singers. But the beauty of Beyonce is she's able to reinvent herself so damn much. And where I got my respect for Beyonce is she never got away from her blackness. Matter of fact, she leaned more into it. There's a time where every artist, especially in the R&B space, where you try to get that crossover appeal, that you just lean way too much into, for lack of better words, white culture, and try to appease white folks a lot. I felt like there was a time where people was trying to get misconstrued, and Beyonce had to tell everybody, whoa, 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 homie, whoa, whoa, I'm black. I'm talking, I'm black, 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 black.
I'm black, black, y'all, and I'm black, y'all.
And I'm black at the black, like dead ass. It was around that Beyonce album. And since then, she's been leaning into it and reinventing herself, like doing different genres. Like even the Renaissance album, that leans way into the gay culture and gay music and the gay club music scene, right? And she's catering more to that. Whereas Lemonade, she gave you a whole album about her dude cheating. Now she put him back in line. Like, bruh, who can do that, bruh, besides Beyonce? And shout out to Jay-Z, man, because he had to sit there and take that. Like, bruh. It had to be hard, bro.
Real talk, like, man.
It had to be hard. Like, she put you on Front Street, let everybody know you was cheating, and then you had to go out there and do a tour with her ass.
And survive.
Bruh, like, yo, shout out to Jay-Z. You the real MVP.
Don't be Eric Benet.
Oh, that's right. He made an album, but he had to make an album, too.
That was the, what was it, 444? He has a song where he said, like, I went Eric Benet and something, don't be Eric Benet.
Not only did Beyonce make an album, put him on Front Street with Lemonade, this man had to do an album behind it. I said, yeah, guys, I learned.
Hey, quick side tangent, though. I coined this term, the Eric Benet syndrome, because you see a lot of dudes who, before they were on, they couldn't get any girls, and then when they get on and they got access to whoever, whatever girls they want, and they just kind of lose their mind and go crazy. Like that's the Eric Benet syndrome, I think.
No, it definitely is the Eric Benet syndrome, but something that Uncle Stash told me, he was like, behind every successful, beautiful woman, there's a guy who's tired of fucking her.
God damn.
He said that. I was like, oh, word. Human nature, right, is not to be monogamous. Like we always talk about, man, monogamy is unnatural. Not impossible, but it's unnatural. That's what makes it so special. Because when you are monogamous and you committed to that one person, you got that self-control and that discipline not to step out. It makes the whole thing beautiful. But when you are a person of means, I'm not even saying man, even women, if you're a person of means and have access, you know, you tend to go overboard. You know, there's levels to this shit. There's Diddy levels. Diddy level where you go way
R. Kelly
too much.
Levels.
R. Kelly levels.
Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby levels.
Weinstein.
Weinstein. There was another guy got caught recently. Who was it? Not Epstein. Epstein. Yeah. There's another person just recently before Diddy. Oh, yeah. The Nickelodeon part. Dan Schneider's crew.
Like Nickelodeon? Nickelodeon? Yeah. What?
Oh, bro. You ain't seen Quiet on the Set, dog? Oh, man. You need to watch that junk, dog. Oh, man.
Man, I feel like my childhood might come crashing down around me.
Nickelodeon. It is, man. Yeah, bro. You're going to get sick to your stomach when Drake Bell tells about how he got raped on set and everything. Oh, yeah.
Who's Drake Bell?
Drake Bell's the guy from Drake and Josh. He was a big Nickelodeon star at the time, man. Yeah, dude got raped.
That might have been after, like, when I was phasing out of the Nickelodeon age range. Because I know the name Drake and Josh, but right. I never watched it.
Right. You know, even Amanda Bynes, man, the shit that happened to them. Man, watch it, dude. We can talk about it.
Man, Amanda Bynes. God damn.
Bro, like, you know, a lot of all this unnatural shit happening to you, dog. You can't be, quote unquote, normal. Your sense of normal, I think you made this point, like your sense of normal becomes different than anybody else. And that's like the same thing with Diddy, though. Like, once you are this and you're used to people telling you yes, and you can buy anything, and nobody tells you no, and you build this persona, you know, it's hard. It's Kanye West. We let this man call himself Jesus and let him declare himself a genius. And we always like, yeah, Kanye's a genius. And then get surprised when he act like this. Like, we built the monster. Trump, the same way. Like, we keep building these damn monsters. We're literally Frankenstein. We built the monster. Then when the monster wreaked havoc, we're like, man, I don't know what. We got to take the monster down. We built them. Like, not to get on my tangent, but that's the problem with today, man. Like, everything is attention culture. And we build these people up. And then when they say something we don't like, quote unquote, we don't like, or it just goes too far, then we're like, man, I don't know how that happened. You allow the behavior to happen. You let these folks slide so damn much. So don't be surprised when they act stupid.
I mean, you ain't wrong. We are perpetual pendulum swingers. Like, we wait till it swings all the way to its zenith on one side, and then it's like, nope, now we gotta, that's bullshit. And then you let it go all the way the fuck back to the other side, and like, nope, this is bullshit too. And it's just back and forth. But we were talking about Beyonce. I disagree in the aspect that I do think she's a great singer. Like, vocally, yeah, man, she's amazing. Like, I think it's hard to argue otherwise. And I do agree with part of the reason that she's been able to sustain her respect and buzz is because she doesn't hide from her blackness. She embraces it, and she really does hold it down for black culture and black expression, and nobody can tell her shit, because she does what she wants to do, and people rock with it, and I respect that a lot.
Cultural relevance for Beyonce is she's bigger than the sum of her parts. So, like, even though I don't consider her one of my favorite vocalists, first, if you say Beyonce can sing, you're just a knuckle-dragging, bottom-feeding hater. She can sing. Mm. She got pipes. Whereas I think there are better singers than her. To say she can't sing would be an insult. She can sing her ass off, but I think she's more of an entertainer. Once again, it's the Prince versus Michael Jackson syndrome. I think Prince was a way better singer vocally than Michael Jackson. However, well, way more talented than Michael Jackson. That's just undeniable. But I feel like Michael Jackson was a better entertainer. And I put Beyonce on Michael Jackson level. Like, yo, bro, the stuff she did with the Homecoming album, bruh, unmatched. Like, the show she putting on, the preparation, repping the HBCUs. Cultural relevance.
She always comes correct.
Man, off top.
Like, her and Bruno Mars, like, performance-wise, man, like, they're on their own echelon of coming correct.
Bruno Mars always does put on a good show. I will say the last Bruno Mars show I saw, it wasn't that great. I feel like
You went to a show?
I did. In Japan.
Oh, man, I ain't never been to a show. I've only seen YouTube.
I went to two shows in Japan. The first show I went to, iconic. He did a great job. But the second show I went to, it seemed like, man, the dude was just on a money grab. And he was, like, tired. I could tell. Like, I could tell when somebody's on stage, like, okay, yeah. yeah, you're not feeling it tonight, but this is off. I mean, he powered through it. Shout out to him. But I was like, ah, okay, bro. Get your yin and dip. Do what you got to do, dog. Get your yin and dip. But that country album, before we pivot off that country album, I will say this goes to one of the things that I personally have always been saying, what makes a genre a genre? Because there was a lot of racism Beyonce was facing when she did that, and a lot of white country stations like, nah, I'm not going to play this because this ain't real country. And it goes to the reason why Beyonce said she made the album. She said she made the album because when she did that duet with the Dixie Chicks at the Country Music Awards, it was obvious that they didn't want her and they were shunning her nose at it, which is infuriating to me because, look, man, every genre of music stemming from America started with black people. It's undeniable, people. Like, look, don't get mad at me saying this.
Well, and the things that black people didn't start aren't around anymore. Who's walking around singing in barbershop quartets these days?
Black folks have had the unique responsibility of being trendsetters, not only for America now, but for the world. Like, black culture, you was in Japan, bro. Them folks love black culture. They just don't love black people. And that's the problem, though. Like, the world loves aping our culture, but they don't like us, which is the problem.
You watch a lot of how, like, the pop stars dance in Japan. Like, you'll be seeing, they be doing the shit that's popping off in America. And the shit that's popping off America, 9 times out of 10, black comes from black culture.
You know, it was this time, you know, me and Chris was dancing and stuff like that. And when I was really dancing in the clubs and stuff like that, and which is funny, right? Because I can dance, I got rhythm, but I'm not, like, I grew up in the time that, like, if you dance, you got girls. So we always out there dancing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And plus, look, when you're 5'7½, 5'8" on a good day, dog, you got to pull out all the stops. Like, you got to pull it out. You got to have a lot of tricks in your bag. But see, I learned how to dance because that's what girls was gravitating to. But when I went to Japan, you know, it was a time that somebody offered me, like, look, man, we want you to teach a dance class, a hip-hop class, dance class. I'm like, okay, cool. And it was for kids. I was like, okay, when do I start? It's like, oh, no, you don't teach the kids. We want you to teach our instructors, and our instructors teach the kids. I was like, what? Why? And it's like, well, we just feel they'd be more comfortable coming from a Japanese person. I'm like, man, fuck this shit. I'm not going to teach your person so you can teach them. Like, if you want my moves, damn it, get me too. Like, how dare you? But that's to the credit
teacher ain't going to bring it like I bring it. It's my shit.
Like, let me teach you how I do this dumb shit I do. But that's the beauty of Beyonce. She's able to just be like, you know what? Oh, you don't fuck with me? Well, I'm going to put out this whole album and expose you. Because she did. Like, that's the beauty of this album. She exposed all the racism. You got idiots like Bill Maher who's trying to use it now that she's number one on the country charts. Like, oh, now we're post-racial. And this shows that we need to stop focusing on race. But no, what you got to understand, she made the damn album because of the racism she got from the country music sphere. And on top of that, when she made this album, there was multiple country radio stations like, we're not playing that because it's not real country, which goes to my point. What makes a genre a genre? And I always say this, because when I listen to this Beyonce album, it's Beyonce. It's Beyonce singing old country tracks. What makes this a country album is the instrumentation, bro. And I had this argument with Meg on the Secret House Against the World. Shout out to my homies, Mega and Jet. But I was like, what makes hip-hop hip-hop? My argument was that it's the instrumentation, the drums, that really make hip-hop hip-hop. Because when you listen to this Beyonce album, it's just her. It ain't no country twang. She's not changing her accent. She's not, oh, I'm telling you about that. She's not doing that. It's Beyonce singing over country tracks. Acoustic guitars, banjos, fiddles.
Harmonicas.
Like, that's what it is, bro. It's like those country elements that are making this a country album. So honestly, not saying I'm a country expert, but when I listen to Johnny Cash, Waylon Jennings, Aaron Neville, to name a few black country people, Aaron Neville is unmistakably country because he has that twang. Ain't no thing where I'm going down the world. You know, it's country. Hootie is country. But Beyonce doesn't sound country on this album. It sounds like an R&B singer who made a country album to say F you to the whole racist spirit. And that's what I love about it. But is it country to me?
God bless her for that.
Man, is it country to me? No, it is a commercial pop country album with crossover appeal. And I'm not even saying that pejoratively, because you know who else did that? I'll tell you who did that. Taylor Swift. She was country, then switched over to pop. You know who also does it? Country music. Country music borrows from a lot of hip hop influences.
808s, bro.
Who remembers the classic Honky Tonk Badonkadonk?
Man.
Badonkadonk. Like I said, look, bro, like every genre steals from every genre, but the thing about like white people, they will steal a genre from us and then protect it when we try to get back into it. Like rock and roll. How dare y'all try to claim that shit? There was a whole push in the 90s, bro. Like, even the Offspring did that, like, pretty fly for a white guy, when they was talking about, like, yeah, you should stick to rock music. Don't be in hip hop. Like, that was a whole thing. Like, race was put to the forefront in all these musical genres. You couldn't blend. I was looked at as a weirdo because I was in a metal band in high school playing metal. I listened to Slipknot. People were like, what the hell are you doing? You're not supposed to do that because you're black. But I didn't put that limitation on myself.
I think a certain generation of younger black people learned that Prince could shred on the guitar far too late in life.
That's because
you see Prince on stage with that electric guitar, shredding, ripping it up, man. Like, you can't say Prince wasn't rock and roll in that aspect. Like, you saw on the award show or whatever, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Yeah. It was good. It was a Tom Petty, Prince and Tom Petty, While My Heart Gently Weeps. One of the greatest guitar performances I've ever seen.
You make a good point, Dal. And because this shouldn't be a surprise, because they've been out there in plain sight. Like, we've always seen this, but it goes back to like programming and marketing, because you had Prince, you had Hendrix, you had Jimi Hendrix, you had Chuck Berry. Like, these are known people. Little Richard, who don't get his props, though, who really like catapulted the genre forward. Like, these are just like known artists, but for some reason, you know, you glance over them.
I think that's a byproduct of the massive popularity of hip hop music and hip hop culture, because it's so synonymously synced with blackness that if you see a black person doing something outside of that, automatically people think it's not black. You know what I mean?
But to that point, though, the problem with that is, and you see it happening with hip hop, just like rock and roll, it was originally black, but then when white people take it, they take it and they don't let us back in it. Elvis came in, there was like finally somebody who can move like the black people, but it's a white face. You know what I'm saying? And that was Elvis' whole get down. Like, I'm going to give you a Negro with this nice, wholesome white face. And then when they take it over and you want to get back in, they're like, no, you can't have it. Same thing with country music. Like, yo, no, you can't have it, which is an offshoot of the blues. Now you can't have it. No, it's ours. And it's those things. And you see it slowly happening with hip hop, too. Like, hip hop is a young white man's game now. Like, they're dead ass. So it's a weird thing that I see all the racial dynamics and components of this, but nobody wants to talk about it. You know, especially that punk ass Bill Maher. Like, he doesn't want to talk about it. We're not post-racial. And that's what I love about the Beyonce album. It's just that it's basically a big middle finger to everybody. Like, oh, I can't do it? Well, fuck you. Here it is. And I'm number
Watch
one
me.
In it. Yeah, and I'm number one. Say something.
Going back to what is country music, right? Because this is the same shit they did with Lil Nas X when he came out with Old Town Road. And he had featuring Billy Ray Cyrus, bro. Let me tell you, one of the best mullets I've ever seen. Like, it's not even ironically good. It's just a good fucking mullet he had.
Shout out to the party in the back.
Yeah.
Business in the front, party in the back.
Yeah, exactly, man. And that song shook up the world. And a lot of people were like, oh, that's not country, blah, 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 blah. But it's like, what makes a country song? Because if it's the twang, that's regional, bro. So if you're not from a certain region where they talk with a twang, you're not welcome in country music. Like, get the fuck out of here, bro. You could grow up in New York and you could love country music and you could make it without a twang. That does that make it not country music? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what makes it country? Is it Is it the twang, or is it like the essence of your spirit and how you're artistically presenting yourself, you know?
Or is it the whiteness? I see that. I'm asking that honestly.
Is
Is
it
it
the
the whiteness?
tractors? Now, if it's the tractors, is it the Bobcats, or is it them John Deeres? And don't even get me on them imports, Kubota. No, sir.
Let me tell you something, my homies, my frat brother, Skylar Bond, country as fuck, own cotton fields, like will wear John Deere hats. The happiest I ever saw that man was when he took me out to the cotton field to show me his new international tractor. That's the happiest I ever saw a man in my damn life. I'm like, this man live for this
International
shit.
tractor.
But like literally, like, yeah, man, let me tell you something, man. Got rid of that John Deere. I got this international now. I'm like, I ain't never seen a man get this goddamn happy over a tractor. I'm like, yeah. And then he told me some shit. He's like, and tell you something, Marcus. Anybody ever fuck with you, man? We'll bury his ass in this cotton field. They'll find. I'm like, whoa, whoa. Whoa. That got dark. Thanks, guy.
Hey, but hey, them's the kind of friends you need, man, when you blow up, because you need them motherfuckers that hopefully you don't do no shit that you got to hide a body. But if you need to hide some shit, it's good to have people like that in your corner that you
Bruh,
grew up with from back in the day.
my family in the Philippines did the same thing. They're like, man, for a couple $100, we take care of all your problems. I'm like, oh, work. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
You hope you never need them, but if
It's
you do
good to
need them,
know.
you hope you got them.
Yeah, it's good to know, man. I don't know. It seems like music has become a hustle. Not even like something people do because they love it. It's like people found out you can make money from it. And it was money there, and then people just got into it, and that was it, just for the money. It become a hustle now. Like even songs now, it's like, okay, well, Spotify and streaming only pays me for the first 30 seconds, so why would I make a 3-minute song? I'm gonna cut my songs down to a minute and a half to 2 minutes. And it's like, damn, dog, nobody doing it for love. But back then, motherfucker had songs that was like 15 minutes long.
Bro, yeah, you listen to those old records, man. You got them tracks, like, especially like there's the extended version of the Temptations' "Papa Was a Rolling Stone"
Right.
with the long ass intro and that long ass like music break in the
Break, get the
middle.
break in there, yeah.
Yeah, man, the whole song, it's like this whole vibe that they created that like most people ain't doing that no more.
I mean, shout out to Nile Rodgers though, because Nile Rodgers said this.
Woo,
Like
woo,
Nile
woo.
Rodgers said, like, look, he figured out that the two parts of the song people want to hear is the hook and the break. So we're gonna start off with the hook. At the break. Like he's really the father of the style now. Like coming in with the hook. Because nobody really cares about the lyrics no more. It's about the hook and the break. But the break has gone away. But we need to bring the break back, man. Right there, there.
Yeah, big facts, man. Shout out Nile Rodgers, man, changed the game. Did you see his Tiny Desk concert?
I did not.
Oh man, I think it came out a few months ago, bro. You got to check that out, bro. It's just straight hits, man.
Man, look, man, whenever you're the voice of Bowie, you're the man, bro. Like, people don't understand, like, how innovative Nile Rodgers was, like, in his production. Like, there's, like, few producers that I super, like, put up there on my Mount Rushmore, which you asked me today, I'll give you four, but tomorrow might be a different four. But
Yeah.
standards are Stevie Wonder, Nile Rodgers, Quincy Jones. And then you can get me on the fourth one.
All right, that's a solid lineup.
But like if you twist my arm, I might say like DJ Paul and Juicy J together for the fourth one because I feel like they really did revolutionize music.
You could definitely go with that. Well, I mean, what would you say about somebody like Tom Bell from Motown? Like the innovator, like the creator of that Motown sound. Like that the Spinners and the Temptations and all those old school groups.
See, here's the thing, right? I feel like, man, this is gonna get me in trouble, but I'm gonna say it. I feel like that was kind of boring. Like I think you don't get a turn until you get close to the disco era, right? I think that's when stuff really starts hitting me when you get into disco and funk during that time of Motown. But when you go to that original Motown, it's kind of slow and sad to me, though. It's just like, you know, the guys in the back, it doesn't do it for me, man.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, you go back far enough, it's like, I was thinking about this the other day, actually, with the Temptations, right? They're one of those groups that they basically had their activity between the 60s and I think into like the early 90s, right? So you have three generations of lead singers. You got the first generation that had what's his name? David Ruffin, right? And then he got kicked out. And then you get Dennis Edwards, he's the singer on like the first dude on Papa Was a Rolling Stone, with the kind of raspy voice. And then he left for whatever reason. Then you get Ollie Woodson coming in the 80s and I think into the early 90s. And like definitely their 70s era when it got funky, I think is their most iconic sound.
So this goes to the debate that you and I always have. I don't know, because I've had this debate with multiple people. I think you think Kendrick Lamar's best album is To Pimp a Butterfly, right?
I thought that a couple years ago when we talked, I haven't really revisited that idea. At the time, was that before Damn came out or after Damn came out?
That was before Damn, actually. Yeah, because we had that before Damn. No,
So that's like
after
two
Damn. No, no, no,
albums
no, no,
ago.
no, no, it's after Damn. Because I was like, Damn is his best album. Oh, no. Okay, no, I'm lying. Because we had this conversation multiple times. We had this conversation before Damn came out, and I told you I thought Good Kid, Bad City was better than To Pimp a Butterfly. You was like, you crazy. And then when Damn came out, I'm like, no, this is the best one. This is the best one.
That makes sense. That adds up to me. And then he dropped his most recent album, I thought was good as
I thought
well.
it was good too. People said it was like boring. It, look, man, and this is my problem with motherfuckers too, man. Let me just vent for a second. I apologize.
Go ahead, go ahead.
Old rapper venting, like, yeah, I'm telling you kids to get off my damn yard. Because we always do this thing where we be like, rap is so derogatory. They only talk about drugs and booty shaking and gold chains and money. Why don't they talk about something real? And then you got a mainstream artist who gave a whole album telling everybody, go get therapy, work on yourself, get better. This is my growth and progression. And everybody shit on it. Now I'm like, look, man, the audience is the problem. You, I ain't talking about me. I ain't talking about you, Alex. But I'm saying all of us, we the problem. The royal we, dog. Dude gave us a solid ass album with therapy and some bangers on there. And everybody's like, this is boring. I hate it
I
here.
got daddy issues and that's on me.
Man,
Like,
great song.
come on, man.
Great song.
That's just hard, man.
Bruh. He gave y'all an
Yeah.
inside of a toxic relationship. Like, yo,
Oh
he
my
did that for y'all.
God.
He revitalized Kodak Black and made us think he was deep. Y'all, this man doing everything, dog.
I
Doing everything, and we don't give this man credit. I don't know, man.
mean,
The album boring.
you're right, because it's like you can't please everybody all the time, you know. So it's like ha part of his listener base wants like that straight hip hop, give me that bars, give me that hard shit that I got royalty and all that stuff, right? But then there's the other part, like, ah, oh, man, that shit ain't deep, nigga. Give us some real stuff, you know, that the older folks can relate to. And you know, he gives you some mature shit, and then it's just everybody gonna say something about any given project.
I just feel like Kendrick can't win, and it's probably partly because he doesn't drop an album every year. But every once in a while, he'll do like he did on that Future song. Just come out here and let everybody know, oh, by the way, I can rap, guys. What do you think about that song, that feature on Future's song?
It came on through my headphones this week when I was in the gym, actually, because I heard about it, but I hadn't gone and listened to it yet. And so I listened to his verse a couple times, man. He's got some original, like, I don't know the technical term, but like cadence or like little things he does within the verse. And you know, he drops some lines, and I was like, oh shit, this motherfucker ain't playing around. So like I liked it, bro. Like it was a pleasant surprise because I didn't know that it was that song when it came on, right? I'm just working out and it came on my release radar on Spotify. So when his verse comes on, I was like, oh shit, is this that shit that I heard about? And then I hear the line, like, ain't no big three, nigga, it's just big me. And I was like, yep, this is the song. This is the song. So I went through and I rewound it a couple times.
Okay, first let me say this, and this is why I put like DJ Paul and Juicy J in my Mount Rushmore, because that
Yeah.
like that beat Metro Boomin, that's just basically that was a Three Six Mafia beat that he just
Oh,
basically
word.
reworked. So that's why I say all the modern music I can trace it back to Memphis, but I digress. But when that verse came on down, I was like, okay, dude is just a shit starter. It may be Little Man Syndrome. It may be Little Man Syndrome, because only thing that happened was on the Drake album, J. Cole and Drake did a song, which look, man, J. Cole mollywopped Drake on that song. I don't care what nobody say. That first person shooter, J. Cole definitely won that battle, if that was a battle at all, when Drake came out looking whack. But like, it's obvious that man, dude was just a shit starter. Cause you remember the last time he did this, right? It was that Control verse. So like I'm like, oh, this is what dude does, man. Dude just wanna let everybody know. Do not put me in the same category with these guys. Let me just tell you guys, I think I'm better.
Which is funny because, like, he doesn't seem like the kind of guy who's gonna do that. Cause, like, he's got like the higher voice and he makes like this deep introspective music and really puts it on for the culture, right? But then when he comes out with some lines like that, like some subliminals and some overt, like y'all motherfuckers ain't shit, you're just like it kind of takes me by surprise because it just doesn't seem like I just don't expect him to do it because he does all that woke shit as well. So
So we talked about this, remember, on the last review of his last album. And I said that. I was like, he's trying to tell y'all. And I told you, look, man, I told you, man, don't fall for it. Because he even said it. What he said, I'm more like Kodak Black. He even said that, dog. He's been trying to tell you guys, don't put me on there. I know what this man can do. And call it little man syndrome if you want to. But I'm like, yo, every once in a while, you gotta let everybody know you're lying. And I know he probably got some residual feelings off of everybody not liking his last album. Cause like that last album, bro, Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers, I feel like it was 2 years too late. If that album would have dropped during COVID, it would have been a hit, dog. I swear. He sat on that joint a little bit too long, dog. Cause that was a COVID album. That was like the COVID mood. But by the time that joint came out, everybody's ready to get outside, dog. Everybody wanted outside music.
Yeah, that's a good point, man, because between that and damn, how many years was that?
Four.
That's a long time in this day and age, man, because it's not like back in the day when you could drop an album every 4 years and people are just chomping at the bit waiting to get to it, man. There's too much content out there and people going, they might not forget about you, but their interest level after a certain amount of time is it's just gonna the enthusiasm is gonna diminish.
Not only that, trends move so damn quick, man. Like you gotta evolve your flow. Like you gotta quick move, and you always gotta be on top of it. Not necessarily your flow, but definitely the beats and your beat selection and how you're producing and the production you're choosing. Cause like on that beat, K went off. And I feel like on all the beats on Damn, he went off because they was just like hard hitting beats. Okay, so the Pimp a Butterfly was great. I love the musicality of that. Like dead ass. I thought it was not his best album, but the musicality is
Yeah.
undeniable. But that's
Shouts out to
also
Thundercat.
right. Also with the last one, Miss Morale, the Big Stepper. The musicality on that I thought was good. It was like too much in the box. It was too like not real instrumentation. I felt like they should have used real instruments, especially if you got a budget like that. But the musicality was still good, but he doesn't do well on those songs, in my opinion, or not all that. He does better when it's a variety, especially when you got some harder type tracks. But yeah, it's amazing that he's able to stay relevant and not put out an album every year. But you know, that's why he gotta hop on a single like this right here. Just be like, hey guys, I'm still here, guys. But you're here. Woo.
Yeah, I'll still
That's
fuck it
raw.
up.
Yeah. But I listened to that J. Cole album, Might Delete Later, and I was like, huh, I'm coming around to Jermaine. Like, hey, Jermaine, you know, buddy, I see what
That
you're
was
doing.
dope.
Wait, so it's dope, bruh. It's dope, but it's dope in the sense that if I had to equate this to my time growing up in hip hop, if somebody had to be Pac and somebody had to be Biggie, in all honesty, Drake would be Tupac, Kendrick would be Biggie,
Really?
and J. Cole would be like Jay-Z or Nas. Like, they're there. You respect them, but you don't really look for them. You know what I'm saying? And that's why I put Drake more like Tupac, because Tupac was putting out song after song after song after song. He was always there. You know what I'm saying? So you never got tired of Pac, because you knew, wait 30 seconds, he's going to put out a new song. That's Drake. He's like, there's not one time this man is not at. Work ethic is impeccable. I don't think shit of his singing, rapping is decent, but the man stays relevant and stays popping. Kendrick more like Biggie, because Biggie only did 2 albums, bro. And what, K only did 4? So like, there was a big gap between Biggie's albums. And like I said, Jay-Z was always putting out albums. Nas was always putting out albums. You always respect him, but you were never like just looking for him. You're like, oh yeah, yeah, cool.
Yeah, that's an interesting comparison, man. To be honest, like, J. Cole, of course, has been on my radar since he came out, because, you know, he's motherfucking J. Cole. But like, I never really got into his catalog. Like, I hear a song every now and again, and, you know, I know a lot of people who love J. Cole. And it's like, I don't know why, I was just never drawn to his style or whatever. So if you coming around on his new album, I might have to give it a listen, because I don't got anything against him. It was just I was never just gravitationally pulled towards his music.
But that's my point, though, because nobody was really gravitationally pulled to Nas. Like, I had a stint of being a Nas fan, right?
Well, this is the first album, right? Which everybody just ate it up. But then after that, it's kind of hit and miss with Nas.
Because production, right? Production was always kind of like booty on Nas' album, but Nas was the default answer, and I feel like J. Cole has become the default answer. When people like, people who don't listen to other forms of rap genres, like alternative rap, underground rap, for them, the default answer when you say lyricist was Nas. Like, oh man, like for me, it became Royce. Although very problematic in his lyrics, but when I found Royce, I switched from Nas. Like, oh no, this guy's way more lyrical than Nas is, right? Then you start getting into other underground cats like Billy Woods and Lucid and people like that, who paint magical pastiches with their music. It's like, okay, yeah, they're lyricists. But like, the default answer was Nas. You're like, oh man, lyrics. But that was like the default answer for mainstream people who listen to rap. Man, Nas is lyrical. And that has become J. Cole now. And that's where I kind of got some of my resentment from. Like, man, y'all just anointing dude, the big lyricist. Which he's not, I'm not saying he's not lyrical, but it was never just extraordinary lyrics to me, you know? And it could be his style, his deadpan deliveries at times, but like, you know, now he's flipping it, he's coming with different cadences, he's getting in his bag, man. I like it now. I mean, I'm coming around on that, much like I came around on Jay-Z and Nas, you know? So that's what I think. But overall, shout out to the shit store, Kendrick Lamar. He stirs the pot.
Once I listen to that J. Cole, I'll let you know what I think. You know, there's another artist I came around on, actually, staying in the vein of hip hop, is Danny Brown. I listened to his recent album because one of his videos came through on YouTube, and it was like, I don't know if it was Claymation or whatever it was, but it was him featuring this other dude, and the beat is dope, the flows are dope, and like it's a very unique approach to making a hip hop song. And after I heard that, I went and checked out the actual album, and like I was impressed, man. I've heard dope features from him over the years, but I never checked out any of his solo projects, and I was very pleasantly surprised when I checked out his recent album.
All right, so I gotta give props to Mega and Jed on this one. Like, I've been a Danny Brown, I've been aware of Danny Brown, right? But I was never like fully aware of Bruiser Brigade. I do know Z Loopers and all that Detroit squad, but Detroit is a weird hip hop city because you can't put your finger on it. But like artists like Danny Brown, Dax, Royce, King Gordy, Bizarre, you get all these type of cats in Detroit. Maybe even Big Sean, right? You get all these cats that are like really spitting, but you don't think of Detroit as a hotbed of music. But you should, but we don't. I don't know why. I mean, of course, Eminem, right? But I think maybe that's the curse of Eminem. He kind of overshadows all those other dope MCs in Detroit. But I say that to say, yeah, Danny Brown got fired. He do. But you are never like really just, I don't know. And I, maybe that's, like I said, the curse of not trying to go mainstream and push yourself. I do feel like he was buzzing at one point in time. But yeah, Danny Brown got bars, man. He's a late bloomer too, like Future.
Yeah, yeah, I could agree with that, man. Because the first time I really heard him, he was featured on a Freddie Gibbs song, and he killed it. And I just never really went, because like I don't know if you've heard the song he's on with Freddie Gibbs or not, but it's his voice is very high pitched, very high energy. Flow is dope, so it's a really dope verse. But I thought, like, I don't know if I want to listen to a full album of this. But when I listened to his recent album, it wasn't all just that. Like, he sometimes his voice goes high and energetic, and sometimes it's lower, more contemplative. And so he's a much, I forgive me, Danny Brown. He's a much more well-rounded artist than I was expecting him to be. And I'm a fan now.
Look, man, that's what it's about. Shout out to you for being open-minded, bro, to be like, you know what, I'll come back around to these people, because look, good music is good music. I don't care what time I find it. If it's new to me, then hey, it's new to me. Like, who did I just recently get into that catalog? I'm like, okay, dude got some dope shit. Who was it? Pray the Truth. Yeah, I listened to Pray the Truth.
I know the name. I've heard some songs, but nothing comes to mind.
Yeah, Houston-based rapper. Super old, ain't made an album, I think, until 2013. But I actually got into this album, I'm like, oh, word, this ain't that bad, man. Because I was listening to Zero, just for old school.
He's growing a lot as an artist, too.
Right?
Because I remember he first came out when, this was like when Texas was big.
Yeah,
like
smooth music, yeah.
Yeah, back in the early 2000s, right? And he was on a song, and he was like super monotone, and I was like, I don't really dig that style. But then I saw a music video with him. I think he was featuring Shaq. And and I was like, actually, Zero's pretty dope. He's not the monotone cat that, I don't know, maybe he used to be. But yeah, man. Yeah, shout out to him, man.
Hey, it's funny you say that, man, because I want to make this point that you just said. Your favorite rapper is probably old as fuck. Like, seriously, like all these rappers now, dog, like even Drake, it's like what, 37? Like 36, 37? Future, like my age, 43? Like, yo.
Eminem's pushing 50.
Eminem, like 47. Like, all these Jay-Z. Rappers are old. Jay-Z passes 50s. Has to be.
Yeah.
You know, these cats are old. Killer Mike is 45.
How old is Logic? Oh, shout out to the Grammy, bro. The Sweep. Woo!
Yeah, got arrested afterwards. But yeah,
shout out. What happened with that? What was the misdemeanor?
From what I pulled from it, it was just basically some rent-a-cop top flight security guard was trying to stop him, and Killer Mike was like, man, get the F in my face, bro. What the fuck you doing? And then dude just snitched on him. He pushed him out the way, and then dude snitched on him. Go get him. There he is, right there. So... That's lame.
That's
from what I got.
Yeah. But man, shouts out to him though. That album is fire. I was happy to see he brought back CeeLo with the vocals, man, over the Curtis Mayfield sample, which shout out to sampling too, bro, because that's a song that everybody knows, but they flipped it in a way that it wasn't boring and just played out.
Sampling is coming back, bro. Well, okay, sampling is coming back, but I respect the sampling done on that album, because I feel like if you're going to sample, you should chop. You should chop, reinvigorate it, maybe pitch up, pitch down, try to change it and make it something new. But, you know, even now, sampling now has gotten so damn, well, in the underground spirit especially, sampling has gotten lazy. They just get the stuff. They don't take out no vocals or try to EQ it or nothing. They just rap over it. I'm like, damn, y'all ain't going to do nothing to this?
I think the beauty of a good sample is it's familiar and new at the same time, because it's like, right. I mean, if you take California Love, right, they just basically took the Joe Cocker song, kind of, you know, put some heavy bass over it. And it's like the instrumental isn't too much changed from if you listen to the original Joe Cocker song, right?
It's okay. So who was really good at this. He's in Hot Wire right now, but before I forget, the Logic is 34. He old as hell.
I mean, he's about my age, but...
I mean, facts. Sorry.
Facts. I think he's living a little harder than I am. Last I checked, he had gained a bit of weight, so he's probably living happy and, you know, maybe aging faster.
Bro, let me tell you something, man. That's the American curse, bro. Once you hit 30, it all falls apart.
Yeah, you got to stay on top of it, man.
Bro, these folks here be giving up. Like, I see folks, and they literally give up, and they got these damn excuses to why they can't work out. Like, they'll binge watch a whole season on Netflix in one day, but then you be like, yo, dog, can you just take 30 minutes out the day? Just walk around the block or go to the gym? Ain't no time. And then I'm like, well, what's your diet is there? Look, you know me. When I fall off, it's usually my diet.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
But I have accountability people like you. And I got people over here now who be like, hey, man, what's going on? Right? However, I tend to be the accountability person for everybody else because I'm still in great shape in comparison to everybody else. But like, yeah, yo, right. You need that, dog. Like, if you got time to do other stuff, to work, if you ain't got time for self-care, you're doing too much. And that's why I do the podcast every week personally. It's discipline. I go to the gym. Even when I don't feel like it, I do the podcast, but I don't feel like it because it's discipline, it's self-care. If I don't do something for myself, that means I'm doing too much. If you ain't got no time for yourself, that's an indication that you're doing too much. Something needs to go back. Because like I told you off camera, off mic, like, yo, bro, if you juggle too much, you become a clown. That's all the juggles, man, clowns. You're juggling too much. Drop one of them balls.
Yeah. I mean, that's 100% it, bro. And I think, like, in this day and age with exercise science and nutrition science where it's at, like, you see a lot of examples of people who age and stay fit. Because you look at, like, now a lot of former athletes, NBA players, baseball players, NFL players, you'll see people in their mid, late 40s or into their 50s, and they still look like they're in really good shape. And I think, for me, at least, that sends a message to me that's like, so getting older isn't what it used to be. Like, you can maintain a good physique. You don't have to get baggy skin and you don't have to necessarily lose your abs and all that stuff. I'm going to be 100% honest. I don't know what kind of science a lot of these people are on, if you know what I mean. But
I do.
Some of them are definitely natural. You know what I mean? Some of them are definitely natural.
I'm not above like enhancement and body enhancements. I think that people do it way too early and way too often.
If it's healthy, right?
Right, yeah. Like Ozempic, I think having Ozempic out now is going to be a game changer. But the only fear I have with having a drug that's clinically proven to help you lose weight and curb your appetite, what does that say about your willpower and desire to do it?
It ain't shit.
And that's the problem I have. It's like, sacrifices have to be made. So you and I both know, when it comes to like doing an acting gig or on set, they're looking for a total aesthetic. So you can't let yourself slide, because if you get that call and you're not ready, you're going to miss out on that. So it's like, if I told you it'd be $1 million at the end of the road if you just worked out every day, you would be working out.
Yeah. You got that carrot.
Your health has to be worth $1 million to you. And just people don't care, dog. And that's what really gets me, dude.
Yeah, bro. I think like maybe not enough people got a chip on their shoulder. Because if you got a chip on your shoulder, that's the carrot. Like if you got a good big old chip on that shoulder, bro, that's going to motivate you just in life and doing daily shit because you got it. That's the motivation right there. You're like, oh, man, you know, whatever the chip is, if it's like underappreciated or like I could have done this, but I didn't. And now my life is what it is now. Like whatever the chip is, bro, if you got a chip on your shoulder, I think that's good motivation.
I don't know, bro. Like, OK, everybody know I got a chip on my shoulder, but you don't seem like a chip on my shoulder type guy.
Oh, I got chips, bro. I stack up chips, man.
I got the chips. Yeah. I got dip to go with the chips.
Yeah, bro. Because, you know, like I come from a sports background, right? And my pops was a professional football player, right? He was a running back for the Seattle Seahawks.
Now, legend out here. Shout out to Daddy Hunter.
Yeah, man. Shout out to Pops. And I got that DNA, right? I firmly believe physically, in terms of physical attributes, athleticism, and all that, I had enough to get to that high level. But the problem with me was I was a late bloomer mentally and emotionally. So I while I had the athletic ability that, if applied properly, I could have gotten to the, I feel like there was a chance. It's nothing's guaranteed, but I feel like I would have had a shot at least, like, you know, having a pro day or whatever, trying to get there. But I wasn't mentally disciplined enough outside of physically being disciplined. Like, I didn't watch football. I didn't watch NFL until I was an adult. Like, I didn't study, see what other people were doing. I wasn't really interested in that. You know, you learn the playbook in terms of, like, what's my responsibility. But I never really even, like, thought about how does my responsibility play into what everybody else is doing. You know, like, I wasn't mentally disciplined and focused. I was physically there because it was fun. I enjoyed doing it. My pops did it. But I just didn't have the mental side of it until I was much more older and mature, like, started to get it maybe like my mid-20s, right? Football's way behind me at that point.
Yes, at that point it's over, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, like, now I got this, but it's not like I'm kicking myself over it, because it is what it is. Like, I'm not upset that, you know, I bloomed late, but it's just like, that's a fucking chip right there. I could have done it, but I didn't. So from now on, I'm going to do it. You know what I mean?
You know what? That actually explains a lot, bro. I always knew this about you, but I didn't know that you considered it a chip. So that actually does, like, really shed a light to the chips on your shoulders and how you approach life. Because a lot of people say they could have went pro. They be bullshitting. If I say, yeah, man, I could have went pro. No, I couldn't. Like, nah. I couldn't have. I didn't have the dexterity nor the hands to make it pro in football. But yeah, you play college football and you come from that pedigree. So I can see that being a chip, man. You're basically a Terry Crews. I didn't know that, bro.
Yeah, man. Me and my brother both, bro. Man, my brother played college football. He was very athletically gifted, man. And it's just he got injured. Like, I think he had more of the mental tools than I did at the same age. But, you know, he got hurt and stuff, and that kind of derailed his trajectory. But yeah, man, we got great athletic genes. And so it's, you know, it is what it is.
Maybe there's a chip factor, man, because I got plenty of chips, bro. I got all the chips stemming from my educational background, my upbringing, my family situations. Mm. Oh, man, I got all the chips. I got salsa for them, too. I can make nachos.
What kind of dip you want, man? You want some onion dip? You want some avocado dip? You got some salsa, you want this queso. Yeah, what you want, man, I got it. Even got that artisanal shit, man, yeah. that sweet potato base.
Salsa verde, you got it all, bro.
Yeah, yeah. And that's it for this episode of The Random Show. You know, we back at it, we got our setup, so we're going to be trying to put these things out more regularly. And it's a different format, but it's still got the essence of The Random Show. We gonna have to bring back Pimpin' versus Simpin' too. Well, shit, we might even get into premature reaculations. You know what I mean? So
we get to watch some more stuff, dog. We do gotta do that, but this is just getting reacclimated to it. I want to say thank you to everybody who rock with us. Like, special shout out to Zanab. By the way, she tried to send you a package, dog. She's trying to send it, but it came late. So I'm going to mail it to you. I still got it.
Oh, thank you. I need to reply to her email, too. I need to catch up with her. She's been holding it down for a long time.
Like, bro, that's the homie, man. Just met from The Random Show and you doing your thing. You know, everybody who's been rocking with us, I want to say thank you, guys. We greatly appreciate it. So, yeah.
Yeah, big thanks. And thank you for the maintained interest during our little absence while we're relocating and you know, getting our new lives up and running. Like, people still be interested in asking when that Random Show's dropping. So much thanks and appreciation for that as well, man. It's motivation for us to keep doing this when we know that people actually appreciate what we're doing.
Life be life, man. And just everybody know, though, Me and the homie Lex' friendship goes beyond the random show. We've been talking, like, yeah. Mm-hmm. But people are like, you still talk to Lex? Like, yeah, man. This friendship ain't built on the random show, bro. Like, this is my this is my homie, dude. Like, yo, this is my homie. Ever since that Panasonic job, this has been the guy. So, you know, as we move forward, this is still the homie. You might not see us weekly, but yo, you know, we're gonna pump these things out when we can.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's the whole picks or it didn't happen kind of cultural zeitgeist that happened a few years ago. If they don't see us interacting online, then we must not fuck with each other no more.
Man, but somebody told me, a wise man, that social media ain't real life.
Man, wise words, man.
Bro, it ain't. And I think y'all really need to take that into consideration, man. This shit ain't real. Like, that social media shit is not real. People build these personas. And then you get mad when you find out the real them. And that's why my social media is cultivated so you don't see anything personal. Like, you don't need to see that, dog. Like, the real me, like, you see glimpses of it in these podcasts when I open up. But, like, for the most part, I don't run from my past. I don't talk about my past either, though. I don't talk about my past and I don't show you anything personal because you don't need to see that shit, dog. Like, once you start involving people in your public life, your private life, and publicly, don't get mad when they start asking about that shit. Like, all these public figures you ask about, like, yo, dude, like, Beyonce, you done made us part of your marriage, man, after you did Lemonade, so don't get mad when we all talking about it. If you don't want nobody talking about your shit, keep that shit to yourself.
Hey, wiser words are never spoken, man. That's the sign-off right there.
Man. Peace!